Damn! We're in a tight spot. Damn! We're in a tight spot!
I'm Gordon Comstock, and, oh boy, we have a doozy tonight. Folks, you know something's wrong with the economy. You know something's wrong in your wallet. You know that more money is being taken from you than ever before. And you're wondering, probably, you're wondering, where is it all going? Well, our guest today, this is huge. You thought the Federal Reserve scandal was huge, and it is, but... Oh, boy, you got to hear this. Our guest today, well, the way he puts it is, it's not a case of looking for a needle in a haystack. This is a case of looking for the haystack on top of the needle. Our guest is Walter Burian. His website is www.cafr1.com. I'll post a link to that. But... Walter, give us your, well, I guess maybe give us your background and this gigantic story. What's going on?
Hello, Gordon. It's good to be with you today. Let's see if we can wake a few people up to the basic reality of what's developed under their nose without them ever seeing it happen due to the factor of how much money is involved. So many people are constantly looking at government, the expansion, the debt, and the police states cropping up all across the country, high prison populations, problems, breakup of the family. They keep scratching their head saying, there's something wrong here, but I just can't figure it out. Well, if they listen to your show tonight, they'll understand. The bottom line is, when you look at how much, when it comes down to crime, breakup of the family, or drug addiction, you have to ask yourself, how much money does that generate for your city, your county, and your state? It's billions and billions and billions of dollars a year. It's a $1 trillion-a-year marketplace. If all of a sudden crime, breakup of the family, and drug addiction dropped off by 85%, there goes a $1 trillion-a-year marketplace. They micromanage their own degree of business. Government in 1946, at the instruction of a few private groups, associations were founded. The first major one was called Metro. The slang term for it was Patch 1313, having to do with it being at 1313, I think it was 62nd Street in Chicago, Illinois. Group of bankers, brokers, owners of companies, judges, politicians. They knew government was where the money was. And up until 1945, government was a pay-as-you-go structure. What they brought in, they put out. What they were pitched on in 45 and 46 was to go into the corporate type of structure and corporate accounting. Now, anyone who owns stock in a company knows that once a year they get a copy of the company's annual financial report. It's mandatory by SEC law for every shareholder, whether you own 1 million or 10 million shares, to get a copy. Well, in 1946, government went into, at the request of GFOA and assistance of GFOA, Government Financial Officers Association, a private group, into the annual financial reporting and accounting structure. What this meant was, everybody hears of a budget, 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 budget. Well, government has a budget, you know, for the city, county, state. But that's strictly a selectively created grouping of service agencies, which they're showing how much they're planning on spending for the year and how much they're bringing in for the year as far as applying to, meet those services. Well, the annual financial reporting and accounting structure is a showing of your entire gross income. Total investment, wealth, and as in government's case, they start enterprise operations that are generating tens of billions of dollars, where it doesn't show up on their budget report. Now, a good example would be is if, say, for example, you had a budget for operating your house, and you're planning on applying $30,000 this year to your budget. Well, you could audit your budget, you know, and count for every nickel, dime, and penny. If you spent $31,000 this year, you'd have a $1,000 deficit on your budget. If you spent $29,000, you'd have a $1,000 surplus on your budget. Are you with me so far?
Yeah.
Okay. But now, if you spend $35,000 and you say, oh, I have a $5,000 shortfall in my budget, would you go knocking on your neighbor's door and say, hey, John, I spent $35,000 and my budget was only $30,000. Can I borrow $5,000?
Yeah.
Now, let's say your salary is $100,000. You have three different little operations going, business ventures, which are generating you $500,000 a year. You've been investing in the marketplace, and you build up a market account of $2 million, which generates you another $300,000 a year. Well, to talk about your budget for your house and leave out all of the rest is gross misrepresentation. It's fraud. And if a public corporation did that, just say, promoted to their shareholders, their budget report, and said, well, we spent too much this year, and we have a $1 million deficit, and you know, we're not going to be able to pay a dividend check, and your stock value is going to go down through the floor. And they held back their annual financial report, which actually showed they were operating in the black when you looked at the overall picture, and maybe made a profit of $3 million for the year. They'd all be indicted by the SEC and be sitting in San Quentin. We have government doing the exact same thing, and they've enacted statutes to allow them to do what is totally illegal for any public corporation to do. But they've created their own statutes to say, look, right here, we can do this. To pull this kind of game off and to transition government into a for-profit corporation, it required the public not to be aware of what was taking place. So the silence is golden rule has been played out for the last 65 years. The public would always hear, budget report, budget report, budget report.
Yeah.
Never annual financial report. Now, government put one extra word on their annual financial report. That one word was comprehensive. So they call theirs the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, or CAFR for short, C-A-F-R. When I first started with national disclosure, you know, the silence is golden rule was well in place. And in June of 98, I started with national disclosure, 130 radio programs in about 3 months, blew the lid off it. And then there were many privately owned publications, front page stories on the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. Media Bypass, Spotlight, Idaho Observer.
Mm-hmm.
Even WorldNet Daily did four feature articles. But the syndicated media, total blackout.
Forget about it.
Not mentioned, not a word.
Yeah.
Okay. The bottom line was, as they transitioned into the annual financial reporting accounting structure, and the public was only thinking budget report, only being given budget report, they thought that was, you know, what government was when they looked at a budget report. And, you know, it showed the tax income that was, you know, brought in and you know, where it was spent. Well, the bottom line was when they shifted into the annual financial reporting accounting structure, any investment fund, they restricted by statute for no showing on the budget report. They restricted all enterprise operations such as tollways, bridges, recycling plants, waterworks, power authorities, and financial authorities owned by city, county, and state just to show on the annual financial report. So as time progressed, keep in mind, back in 1945, government was a one-on-one cash and carry operation. They brought in $1 million, they spent $1 million. Or if they spent $900,000, they had $100,000, left over. Now, when they show the budget report, usually when you look at any large entity, their annual financial report or comprehensive annual financial report will show they're bringing in 2 to 3 times more gross income than they're showing on their budget report. And only 1/3 of the income is tax income. two-thirds is non-tax income.
Hmm.
99% of the people listening to your show right now are, you know, we're thinking, well, I thought government survived on taxation. I thought 99% of their income was taxation. Wrong. It's only one-third of the gross now. The number one question IRS asks in an audit are, what are the gross receipts? Well, when you look at the gross receipts of any city, county, state, and you take into account the full operation, investment income, enterprise income, and tax income, 2 to 3 times larger than what's shown on the budget report. And they've excluded all of the profit centers, all of the investment funds for no showing on the budget report. When you hear a city or a county or a state talking about their rainy day fund, everybody goes, well, let's see what's in the rainy day fund. You know, let's see if they're hoarding money. The rainy day fund usually is their pocket change. Insignificant in comparison to all of the other revenue.
Mm-hmm.
They may have, you know, $10, $15, $20 billion stashed away in a financial enterprise operation. You have, I'll give you an example for a recycling plant. When a city starts a recycling plant, the public says, okay, well, that's a good thing, but they're not going to operate at a profit, are they? Oh, no, it's going to be a city enterprise operation, can't operate at a profit. So they start it, and they build it, and what they'll do is they'll go to an actuary, someone who writes a pension fund, and they'll say, well, we're expanding so great, and our recycling business is taking off a little bit more and a little bit more each month. 20 years from now, we're going to have to expand 3 times the size we are and buy a whole new lot of property and so forth. And the actuary goes, well, how much acreage are you going to need? Oh, about 400 acres. How big of a plant do you want to build? Oh, about 3 times the size it is right now. So the actuary sits down and says, 20 years from now, 400 acres. Oh, expensive. It's going to be about $1 million an acre. And equipment, at least 3 times over in cost. Moving, transportation, getting everything done, the shift. You're going to need $810 million to do that. So the city goes, okay. So now, say, for example, they make a $45 million profit for the year. On a monthly or quarterly basis, they'll pull off that $45 million, deposit it into the advance forward liability account. You understand when I say an advance forward liability account?
I think so,
yeah. Plant 20 years from now, they're putting aside for this new plant. And declare it as a line item payment and not as a standing asset.
Mm-hmm.
So they can even take it a step further. If they made a $45 million profit for the year and they funneled off $55 million into this advance forward liability account, they could now say, oh, we're operating at a $10 million shortfall on our budget. I guess we're going to have to raise collection fees. Well, yeah, I've looked at I grew up in New Jersey, East Brunswick, New Jersey. On their recycling plant, they've stashed away about $710 million into their advance forward liability account. You know, operating at a profit nonstop. If you threw out an aluminum can in your regular garbage, you'd get a ticket for $125. Six-pack, 6 times 125. Mandatory recycling, mandatory profit for them, and they hide the profit by creating an advance forward liability and then funneling all of the profit into that account, declaring it as a line item payment. Now, on the pension funds, which is a very large and massive grouping of investments for government, everybody goes, well, pension funds are a good thing. People should have retirement funds. Well, guess what? Every government employee on the local level, their pension funds are not like you or I if we got a 401k plan where we own the money.
Yeah.
Government makes them strictly participatory. It's like buying a ticket on a train. You can ride the train, but you don't own one piece of the train. And as they play their games with their employees and doing actuarial projections, they have been running up 2-3 times the amount necessary in the pension funds to meet the actual genuine liability by playing their little games on actuarial projections. And no one knows. The public doesn't know. The employees don't know. And the employees don't realize they don't own 1 cent of that pension fund. If the pension fund made a profit, like tripled in size, where they could pay the employee 3 times the amount if it had been profit sharing,
mm-hmm.
the employee doesn't get 1 cent extra. Nothing.
You're talking about the government employee?
All government employees on the local level. Well, now, the federal government, like the FBI, their pension funds are profit-sharing. They did real well, and they made enough to make three times what they were supposed to get. They get three times what they were supposed to get. Local government employees, strictly participatory.
Well, I noticed...
So, he's $25, $35, $40 billion, $100 billion. In California, you're probably up to around close to going on $3 trillion right now. Between CalPERS, CalPERS International, all the other local governments that are not participating in CalPERS, but go in their separate pension funds. And the managers all network together. For the last 40 years, government has taken over the marketplace. They've been the Fortune 500 companies, if you break down stock ownership, say of Microsoft, comes out to about 81% owned by composite government investment funds. The Fortune 500 companies, J&J, IBM, AT&T, all 65, 70, 75, 80% owned by composite government funds. There are over 86,000 local governments in this country. School districts, cities, counties, enterprise operations, each with their own investments, each with their own assets. And the composite total has taken over the wealth of this country, the stock market, the insurance industry, banking. When you borrow a mortgage on your home from, say, Chase or Citicorp or Manufacturers Hanover, and you think you're borrowing private sector funds, wrong. If you take a look at the balance sheets of the bank on who their investors are, if you look through a state retirement fund CAFR, it lists, it's good, they're good to look at because it lists the individual investments when they were purchased, what the current market value is, and how many shares they own or dollar value. You'll see, $7.2 billion Citicorp mortgage division, $2.4 billion credit card division. Government is financing the banks. Your insurance policy, government created different regulations on the insurance industry where over 50% of your premium goes back to governments to satisfy their investment income. You'll hear about debt. Oh, our city's in debt for $35 million. Our state's in debt for $100 billion, and we'll be paying off for it for until the year 2025. Well, what they're not telling you is a lot of them have started their own financial enterprise authorities or cut a deal with a bank or banks or brokerage houses. They funnel all the revenue and money and surplus cash into these different operations. And then when they have a bond issuance for the new school district, the new county jail, the new roadway, they'll use their own investment funds and fund their own debts. As in a case like Missouri, Missouri is almost 100% financed on all of their own debt, using their own investment funds. A good example, to use here, for your listeners, say, for example, Gordon, you had $5 million and you wanted to hide it. So he called me up and he said, Waller, I'm going to give you $5 million. I want you to start a mortgage company. I'm going to buy a $5 million home, and I want you to underwrite my mortgage, and I want you to charge me 16% interest. Say you give me $5 million in cash, I start a mortgage company, you buy a $5 million home, I underwrite your mortgage, and I charge you 16% interest. You now go around to all of your neighbors, friends, and business associates saying, oh my God, this $5 million mortgage is killing me, and they're charging me 16%, I don't know how I'm going to survive. Well, when you forget to mention it's your $5 million and you're collecting the 16% interest through me, slight tad bit of misrepresentation there. Now, the Missouri fund manager, when I approached him on this issue, I said, if you have the money, why don't you just pay cash? He goes, well, if the public had to borrow from the private sector, they would have had to pay 0.25% more. So look what a good job we're doing investing the public's funds. We got them 0.25% less than they would have had to pay from the private sector. Yeah, right. They're building up a power base in any way, shape, or form through the use of investment funds. And when I say a power base, they are now the power place. Government is the market.
It isn't that
and communism? By investment.
Yeah.
And to be able to pull, and keep in mind, the syndicated media is in a 100% symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
With government, because the money, the cash flow is just rolling in through the syndicated media. I always look at motive, and When I looked at the syndicated media, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, I said, how much of their gross income is directly derived from government? You know, so the obvious was how much they get in federal, you know, grants and city, county advertisements and so forth. It was only about low side 16%, high side about 28%. So I said, okay, that's not controlling interest. But then I remembered the government ownership of the Fortune 500 companies and all large corporations with their multi-billion-dollar advertising budgets. Well, when you own stock in a corporation, that gives you a proxy vote. And if government's 80-85% owner of a corporation through, say, you know, 12,000 different local governments who are being pooled together under, say, 20 managers, you know, with proxy to exercise those proxy votes,
yeah,
they can direct where those multi-billion-dollar advertising funds, you know, are spent.
Yep.
And I said, okay, that gives 100% control. Then I started looking at the personnel involved, you know, how many people, you know, from the media got cushy government directorships.
There you go.
Quite a few.
Kickbacks.
And, you know, and it's a networking to control the biggest game in town, which is the cash flow coming in. You know, their biggest problem is, we need a little wheelbarrow. Yeah. And the greed factor, they've been tapping into the public, you know, more and more each and every year. You have a bunch of spoiled little yuppies there that are greasing their pension funds, greasing their pockets, cutting deals under the table with the investment funds. And the public sits there still clicking, you know, scratching their head saying, there's a problem here, but just can't figure it out. Well, folks, it's due to the money involved. Nothing more, nothing less. Every issue decided by government has to come down to the greed principle. They have to masterfully entertain the population, keep them distracted looking off in right field as they conduct business as usual in left field. And they build up to, you know, over the last 65 years to where the public is being treated as total idiots, you know, kept in the dark and not a peep, not a word, not a mention. Now, keep in mind the comprehensive annual financial report for the last 45 years was sent out to the CEOs and directors of all of the syndicated media, was sent out to all the deans of the colleges. All the deans of the colleges produce their own annual financial report, state and county colleges and so forth. The both Democratic and Republican Party, all the representatives were sent copies each and every year. Not a peep, not a mention, not a word. In fact, if you try to get a congressman or a senator to put up his own local government comprehensive annual financial reports on his website or on his newsletter, right, which is the holy grail of accounting for government, you run into a stone wall. And if you go to my website, capra1.com, there's a very long front page. But as you go down, you'll see articles linked to two columns, you know, big print, click here, click here, click here. One, you'll see it says silence is golden. Read that article. Right at the top of the webpage, and there it says start here, e-news. And basically what I'm suggesting there is that the people on the city level mandate that their city council exclusively send out a letter recommending that all registered voters and taxpayers carefully review their local government annual financial reports. City, county, school district, state, enterprise operations. A lot of them are available for downloading off the internet now.
But Walter, let me ask...
And they will refuse. They will refuse to do so.
Yeah, Walter, that's... Wow, if you go to your local government and you ask for something like that, they're going to stonewall you. Is there a protocol or even a script that you can go through and tell them so that legally they have to give it to you?
They legally have to give it to you by the statutes that were written for the creation of the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, and they're supposed to give you the current copy at no charge. Past issues, they can charge you a reasonable printing cost. But when I first started with National Disclosure in June of 98, total blackout. I did a search on Google for, you know, CAFR, Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. I got about 8 or 9 hits. And all of them, as I mentioned, the group that started this out of Chicago was called GFOA, Government Financial Officers Association. Yeah, all I saw were 8 or 9 hits and would say, like, City of Minneapolis wins the Certificate of Excellence Award for their, you know, 1996 CAFR. You know, no comprehension or editorial coverage whatsoever. Zero. Nada. Nothing. And keep in mind, this is the holy grail of accounting. I then started with national disclosure in June of 98. If you do a search right now on CAFR, I don't know if you have your computer up, Gordon, but
yeah.
If you go to Google, punch it in. Tell me what the hits are.
CAFR.
Yeah, just put in CAFR and hit search.
Uh-huh. Well, your site comes up first.
How many hits in the top right corner does it say?
Oh, boy. Over 7 million.
That's right. I was effective, Gordon.
Uh-huh.
The blackout may continue from the syndicated media or controlled education. And what is the number one hit on that list?
Yours.
My website, that's correct. I'm real popular with the government boys.
So, Walter, are you telling me if I go to my county hall here, city hall, they're going to give me the CAFR? They're not going to stonewall me?
What's the name of your city? Okay, punch in CAFR and in quotes, send CAFR next to it, out of the quotes.
Okay.
How many hits did you get?
I have 7.
And does it list a link to download the CAFR? It might.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, everyone who's listening to your show, do the exact same thing. Punch in your county, your city, your school district, an enterprise operation, and put in CAFR, you know, after it, and put, you know, the name of the city or the county and so forth in quotes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you get an exact hit on that city and CAFR. And most of them you will find, there's probably out of the 84,000 or 86,000 annual financial reports produced each year by local government, you'll probably get 12,000 available for downloading on the Internet now. Like I said, I was effective. But the bottom line is, zero coverage, zero mention, total blackout in the syndicated media. They'll stonewall you until the cows come home. Picture, and as I mentioned, the CAFR is the holy grail of accounting for every local government. The document. So let's equate this to the Catholic Church. Say, for example, the Bible, for some reason, the Catholic Church did not want anyone to read what was in the Bible, so that they could tell them whatever they wanted them to believe, and there would be no confirmation that it's in the Bible. He walked into your Catholic church, and he said, "Can I see a copy of the Bible?" And they looked back at you, and they said, "Bible? What's that?" We don't have one of those. Same analogy.
Yeah.
Or the Quran, or the Torah. You know, to pull off the biggest game in town, they had to keep the silence as golden rule in play. And believe me, was it golden. I wrote a little analogy article once regarding, foxes. And I said, I equated government to the foxes. And I said, well, at one point, chicken ranchers, they had 2,000 chickens. And the foxes said, we'll guard your chickens from all other predators if you give us $100. You know, 100 chickens, a year. Farmer said, well, that's reasonable, and they gave the foxes 100 chickens a year. The next year, the foxes came back and said, see what a good job we did? We need 200 chickens a year. Then it went up to 300, then 400, and then 500, now 600. The farmer said, hey, enough's enough. We have 2,000 chickens, you're now taking 600. No more, right? So the foxes, in their own wisdom, they started their own chicken house. Right, and they told the farmers, well, we're only going to take 720 chickens right now because we're going to be nice about it. But they forgot to mention to the farmer, they now have a chicken house of 4,000 chickens built up over to the side.
Well, about a decade ago here in California, Orange County went bankrupt. What was that all about?
Oh, that was real cute. Three managers got a little slap-happy trading derivatives. Yeah, they were doing it independently, not following the syndicate, so to say.
The syndicate, yeah.
And they lost $1.3 billion. So they started crying, oh, my God, they lost $1.3 billion. We're going to go bankrupt. We're going to have to shut down the schools. We're going to have to lay off all the teachers. And you're going to get mugged in your bed at night. you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, so the proverbial hit the fan and everyone's saying, oh, my God, $1.3 billion? Oh, how could they do that? Well, there was one associate of mine, which I chatted with back then, and he, his name was Anthony Hargis. He was a banker. And he was the only other person besides myself that had the ability, that had the gall to mention the CAFR and break the silences or golden rule. What he did was he looked at Orange County's comprehensive annual financial report, and he would determine, based on their cash position, you know, all investment funds, you know, their all of their cash,
mm-hmm.
how long could they operate without collecting one penny of taxation before they actually did run out of cash. In Orange County's case, when they were crying bankruptcy, they could have gone on for another 11.9 years without collecting one nickel of taxation before they ran out of money.
Wow.
And providing all of the exact same service.
So,
you know, you're talking a shell game. And keep in mind, as this blossomed, and as government now, you know, had more, you know, more money than Midas, they kept expanding, taking more control, and it became a free-for-all. The attorneys, there is no accident that, you know, if you look at your governors and your congressmen and your senators, half are attorneys now. You know, they were in on the game for
so
the
judges,
last 15, 20 years.
Judges are in on this, too.
Yeah, and it's an extortion game. The public, thinks, you know, they're conditioned and taught that there's some type of, purpose behind government and that they're doing this phenomenal job, but it's all a con game. Yeah, you know, it goes back to Al Capone in the 30s. You know, he used to say, what are we doing fighting government? Let's become government, then we'll take whatever we want. And, my folks, the rest is history. Government has been expanding since the 40s to take over everything.
So they...
And the primary example I like to give to listeners is, say, for example, everyone listening to your show had a 12-year-old boy, and they gave him carte blanche to write his own allowance check, you know, and they made $1,200 a week. Within no time, the kid would be cutting a check for $1,000 a week. You'd be $200 left over for yourself. And you said, enough's enough. He told the boy, you're going to cut him back to $800 a week. Okay, which is still two-thirds of what you're making. He'd be hollering, screaming, kicking, using any logic available to him to justify how a 12-year-old could not survive on $800 a week. There is no difference here whatsoever. You just have bigger boys and sharper players. And they're ruthless. And they will kill you. They will take your children. They will take your house.
Yeah.
They will throw you in jail. And I guarantee you there are so many political prisoners being taken out, thrown in jail. No one knows about it. No one sees about it. Total blackout on the syndicated media. And they are destroyed. You know, your property is stolen. I mean, they've taken so many houses from little ladies, it's not funny. You know, there's, you know, still some government employees that will, that's not right, we shouldn't be doing this. You know, they'll step in, they'll stop certain things that are happening and so forth. But when you get up to the upper echelon, purely money, my folks. Now, I'll point something out for you. And when this registers in your listeners' brains, which I hope it does, they're going to understand every policy that was done by government for the last 60 years. I have right on the front of my page the listing of investments for the New York State Retirement Fund CAFR. Just one, it's one annual financial report. It's a big one. It's a good showing. And if you can download the entire listing of investments. As you go down the listing of domestic and international stocks, you will see, you know, which ones are the biggest profit makers, 400%, 500%, 600% profits. In order, the oil companies, the war industry groups, pharmaceuticals, the banks, okay? And as you scroll down the list, when you get down to Microsoft Corporation, just, like I said, this is just one annual financial report for the New York State Retirement Fund CAFR. How many shares of Microsoft do you think they own? Take a guess.
Oh, sure. Gosh. I wouldn't know where to begin.
Just take a wild guess. Think high. Think a big number. What would you think?
500.
Well, come on. Be real.
5,000?
Microsoft stock.
Yeah.
44 million.
Oh, my gosh.
44 million. Look at ExxonMobil. Look at all the different other oil companies. When people complain about the oil, companies, they're raping us with $3.25 per gallon gasoline. How come the government doesn't stop this and do something about it? Well, folks, government owns the oil companies by investment. They're the ones reaping the windfall.
Isn't this communism?
It's communism with a very strong fascist twist.
Uh-huh.
And the public sits there being masterfully entertained, wondering whether they're going to watch The Simpsons or South Park tonight and planning their next SUV trip to the Cape.
Wow.
Without a clue. And it's right there in front of them. And, you know, the politicians will go, well, people don't want to look at this. It's too big of numbers, and they wouldn't understand it. And wrong. They're not even going to mention it for you to look at.
Walter, how does this tie in with, say, 9/11 and the war on terror?
I was hoping we weren't going to go there, but...
Quote, unquote.
I used to be a tenant at the World Trade Center back in 1978, 79, 80.
Wow.
And I was a commodity trading advisor for about 14 years. I did a national news line coast to coast on one of the market systems, specializing in silver and treasury bonds and so forth. And back then, keep in mind, this is 78, 79, the only concern the tenants had were a truck being loaded with explosives and driven into the underground parking deck, because it was wide open, anyone could drive in and out, no problem. Or a hijacked passenger plane being flown into the towers.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 1978 or 79, Port Authority circulated a flyer addressing those two issues. In fact, I think they even published it in the New York Daily News. So don't concern yourself about the trucks. We monitor the truck traffic by video camera 24/7. No truck's allowed to be left unattended. We keep a tow truck on standby. If a truck's left unattended, if we can't find the owner, we immediately tow it outside of the complex. And regarding hijacked passenger planes, it's a no-fly zone for non-commercial aircraft. Any commercial aircraft are on pre-designated flight paths. We monitor from, 46 tracking stations, private, commercial, military, all air traffic, and all of the airlines give us the feed on what plane's going where and its course. If a plane goes off course, bing, 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 red flag goes up. We launch an intercept, and if it does not respond, there's authority given to shoot that plane down.
Yeah.
That comes within 5 miles of the towers. And the base commander had standing authorization to issue the shoot-down order. And keep in mind, this back in 78.
Yeah.
Now, they ran constant sorties, practice runs, responses to genuine threats, all the time. I had a friend with a citation, Cessna Citation II. He was from, he had his folks out from Iowa, and he took him up in his plane, and he worked at the Trade Center, and he decided to take a flyby. He got buzzed by an F-14.
Mm-hmm.
He told him to immediately turn around. He was a little slow turning around. That F-15 buzzed his nose and said, turn around now, we're going to blow you out of the sky. Yeah, he turned real quick. So that was standard operating procedure back in 78. So on the night of 9/11, or I should say 9/10, I was trading the markets, had a few bond positions on, and usually, if I'm up late, 2 o'clock's late for me. I always go to sleep. That night, could not sleep. First time in, 2 decades. Could not go to sleep. Stayed up all night. And about 5:30, 5:45, I'm in Arizona time, got wrenching feeling. Someone was really bothering me, and all of a sudden, I see bonds pop up. They move in ticks. There's 32 ticks to a full point. All of a sudden, I see them, boom, up a point and a half, boom, down a point and a half, up a point and a half. I'm there, what the hell is going on there? And I look at the front page of AOL, and I see Tower 1 burning. Walked over to my video, turned on, CNN, and hit record. Well, about... 5 minutes into it, they're focusing in on all of the, what I call, ragheads, you know, the guys wearing the turbans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, every other shot.
Yeah.
They mentioned Bin Laden's name 16 minutes into it.
Oh, Emmanuel
okay.
Goldstein. Yeah, yeah.
And if you're talking about Larry Silverstein, okay, the World Trade Center, they were trying to sell it since the 70s. No buyers.
Oh, it's a reference to the novel 1984, the patsy they sent up every time the government was bombing its own people.
Yeah.
Bin Laden, yeah.
Well, let's go to Larry Silverstein, though. He takes out, you know, he now comes forward saying, well, I'll take the lease on the World Trade Center complex. It was a 99-year lease for $3.5 billion.
Yeah.
Okay. Which meant monthly payments. Now, he has about $100 million into the deal, okay, which secured him the entire World Trade Center complex.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing he does, you know, they weren't insured for terrorism. The towers were never insured for terrorism. He takes out a double indemnity clause policy for terrorism for $3.5 billion. In other words, if there's two incidences, he can pay up to $7 billion on the policy. The ink was not even dry yet on the policy. Down goes the towers, in goes his claim for $7.5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, not bad for a $100 million investment. And, you know, there were some inherent problems with the towers, asbestos on the inside, you know, technically they were supposed to be demolished. And, you know,
who placed the 9/11 put options?
Insignificant. Doesn't matter. Insignificant.
Well, I read on your website where it was government inside traders.
No, you caught that wrong. If you read through the article, what I say is the $5 million is chump change on chump change on chump change. The I noticed before 9/11, I follow the institutional fund short positions, and institutional funds are government funds. When you hear the word institutional funds, that's government funds. And even the ones that are private, you think are private, if you backtrack them, you'll find out their management accounts for different cities and counties and so forth and state agencies. But I noticed the institutional funds about 6 months before 9/11 on their short derivative positions. Usually they're about 15-16% short. High side was 30%, low side 10%. Well, they breached the 30% mark, and the largest position they ever had on short was 40%. Well, about 3 months before 9/11, they were 40% short. And then about a month before 9/11, I saw the institutional derivative positions 65% short. I mean, massive. I said, something big is going to be happening. I said, oh, shit. I mean, 65% short, something big is about to happen. All right. So when 9/11 occurred, as the markets collapsed internationally, the number one player on those markets was composite government investment funds. And they had their largest short derivative position on ever. Must have been a coincidence, I guess. But the biggest profiteer from 9/11 were the composite government investment funds. They took a loss on their physical positions, but their short derivative positions made a killing.
Mm-hmm.
Probably about $3 trillion in 10 days. You know, so here's the media focusing on this $5 million put option on the airlines.
Mm-hmm.
These must be the people behind 9/11. Yeah, like, let's treat everybody like total friggin' idiots. You know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars are made instantly internationally on people that had short derivatives.
Wow.
The government is the number one player in the derivative market. If the prices, if they're going to roll the price down, they take short derivative positions. If they're going to roll it up, they take long derivative positions. And if you look at the bottom line balance sheets, I'll go back to the New York State Retirement Fund CAFR. Okay, yeah, you can download 2000, 2001, 2002, 3, 4, 5, 6, and look at the listing of investments. They never missed a heartbeat in the black. As the public, after 9/11, was losing 40, 50, 60% of the value of their 401k plans, right?
Yes.
Government didn't miss a heartbeat.
Yeah, how about that, huh?
Took a loss on their physicals, made a killing on their derivatives. And the tune goes on, the beat goes on, as they say.
Well, Okay, so are they using this money now that they've siphoned from us and accumulated over 50 some odd plus years?
It's a power base. Any corporation could be backed, any industry group could be taken over.
Any global empire?
Any global empire can be created or destroyed with the use of those investment funds. In 1982, the feds put out a transmittal letter to all local government pension fund managers. And it effectively said, you and the local government have very odd and peculiar rules regarding the management of your pension funds. Most of you are not allowed to trade derivatives, such as calls, puts, stock options, advanced foreign currency transactions, futures. And this can cost you billions of dollars. But CalPERS, which has an excellent record in management of their funds, has just gone international. And CalPERS International is the buffer transfer agent for funds. The actual parent company is not called CalPERS International, but CalPERS International is strictly the transfer agent. So in 1982, they started consolidating the major market makers' account. And, you know, the letter went on to say, you know, if you participate with this group, you'll not be subject to those pesky little rules. So now they created an offshore investment trust designed to get several trillion under management, which is now outside the United States, not subject to the SEC rules as it would be if it was operating in the United States. It was not subject to being held in dollars. It could be held in Swiss franc, Russian rubles, Chinese yuan, whatever it chose. And it could also invest in any corporation internationally or investments internationally. So the first target market was Mexico. Back in the 80s, through the offshore funds, they drove the value of the peso down through the floor. I don't know if you remember back in the 80s, but remember how it was frontline about the peso collapsing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when it got down through the floor and the Mexican government was crying uncle, you know, the feds came in saying, well, we'll give you $50 billion to bail you out if you pay us back in crude oil at $10 a barrel. They bid. We got them for 50, then another 30, and then another $35 billion, about $115 billion. At $10 a barrel. It didn't matter if crude went through to 30 a barrel, they had to pay us back at 10. Simultaneously, the CalPERS international group sank in about $380 billion into the Mexican marketplace. Corporations, banks, insurance companies, the whole nine yards. Well, with the, and it's now in the peso, keep in mind, it's not, these are investments in the peso. So as the currency rebounded, which they made a phenomenal profit on, and taking advantage of the cheap labor, that 380 some odd billion turned into well over $2.5 to close to $3 trillion in 5 years. Yeah, if they did 160% return on their investments, that was the low end, and something was wrong. Most were doing 400, 500, 600% returns per year. So that, you know, they tasted blood on that move. The next target was the Soviet bloc countries. After they got Gorbachev to review the situation, and keep in mind Gorbachev, what they probably did was they showed him exactly what they were doing here, the model in the United States, and Gorbachev said to himself, hey, they have more control than we do, and they're making 10 times as much. They wrote the better blueprint for communism than we have. And their people are more motivated running on the treadmill, generating more productivity. Let's go democratic. Gorbachev, now follows our blueprint.
Uh-huh.
Because basically it was more control, more money coming in. And at the same time, we then funneled in over $1 trillion into the Soviet bloc countries. Those returns were 35, 45, 65, 85% was on the high side. That's still pretty darn good. And then the big cherry to pick was China. In 96, 97, 98, 99, 2000, we sank in about $1.5 trillion into China when China agreed to come online and, you know, certain things were agreed upon. And, you know, when people complain about outsourcing, oh, those corporations are moving all of their operations to Taiwan and Vietnam and China and Russia and Czechoslovakia and Mexico and South America. Why can't they consider us people, our workers here in the United States? Well, reality, folks, government was buying up all of the investments internationally. They forced, they were constantly propping those corporations, which they owned all of the stock of those corporations, to move overseas. So their profit would go right through the roof, which it did. That's how the composite government investment funds took over the entire market. They were manipulating and controlling everything that was taking place. So when you hear NAFTA and GATT and so forth, you now know the true reason for those policies.
Nice.
It was to accentuate their own profit on their own investment funds. And when you have, you know, the top money makers being the oil industry groups, the pharmaceutical companies, the banks, and the war industry groups, that's the biggest conflict of interest you can possibly imagine.
Yeah.
And the pharmacy companies, that's, you ever wonder why they're pumping so many drugs down our kids, the old folks, they run up bills, hundreds of thousands of dollars when they complain about the tax money paying for it. They want it. They're funneling budgetary money, tax revenue, right into the corporations, which they own through stock owners. This is basic fundamentals. And the public has been totally left in the dark by the full cooperation of the syndicated media, controlled education, not to mention a word, not to say a peep, and keeps the public totally distracted in left field as the boys continue the takeover in right field. If the public all of a sudden got instant comprehension as to the takeover by the boys using government, okay, the revolution would be tomorrow.
Wow.
Period. But being that the old frog in the teapot routine has been played out on the entire population of the United States, a little bit, you know, if, say, for example, what is taking place today, okay, if our grandfathers, right, all of a sudden, you know, you snapped your finger and 1,000 of the founding fathers appeared and saw what government had developed into, I'd love to own stock in a baseball bat company. I'd sell out. They'd get their hands on every baseball bat they could and start busting down a few doors and shutting down the operations. It's an extortion racket in every way, shape, and form, period, to funnel more money into their pockets. They have to keep, you know, 95% of the population is sitting there in a delusional state. Everything's fine. Everything good. We're the best company, country in the world. We do everything well, and we're so generous and kind and beautiful and so forth. Well, that may be the intent, and that may be the individual's spirit, okay, and desires. The hardcore reality is what has developed, and they don't have a clue because they don't look. And they're not intended to look. I've had so many people since I started National Disclosure in 98 call me up saying, Walter, I wish the syndicated media would do their job and cover some of this, at least a report on it. I tell them, they do exactly what they're supposed to be doing. They do exactly what they're getting paid to do, and that's not to say a peep, not to say a word, and keep you looking at Janet Jackson's, you know, whatever popping out of her shirt, or O.J. Simpson, or whatever. Keep in mind, okay, Randy Weaver, they blew his wife's head off when she was holding her baby in her front door.
Yeah.
Waco, Texas, they burnt 100 people on national TV, men, women, and children alive, broadcasting blow-by-blow plays without any repercussions whatsoever. And then they prosecuted the survivors. The World Trade Center goes down, totally orchestrated. Anybody who has half a brain that looks at the reality of what transpired there and doesn't follow the sound bites intentionally, given to them by the syndicated media and government, but looks at the hardcore physical facts, the towers were demolished. I mean, that was demolition, but that brought them down.
Agreed.
I know that for a fact. Everything I know, it was demolished. Physical impossibility for them to come down the way they did unless they were demolished, period. Which meant planning it in advance. Then Tower 7. Virtually no damage. And they say, well, we're going to pull it. Down goes Tower 7. Purely in a demolished state, just like any other demolition. And to do that, they had to do it days in advance. It's not something you can do in like 2 or 3 hours. You know, and the public sits here buying it all, And not a problem, not a consequence, no repercussion for the players. What did they do? They made a couple of $1 trillion on the marketplace. They go in and take over Afghanistan. They go over and take over Iraq. And now they have their crosshairs on Iran. As the public sits there getting masterfully entertained, getting the sound bites, you know, if right now the Democratic Party and the Republican Party wanted to run Charles Manson and Bundy, you know, for office,
yeah,
and they played their little spin games on who's better and, you know,
sure, yeah,
started the debates and the talking heads and so forth, you'd have 60% of the population. Well, I really don't like Manson, but
yeah,
Bundy, maybe, well, I'm not too sure. They're being given two options, Manson or Bundy.
Yep.
And guess what? If they had a presidential election, one of them would win.
Well, Walter,
because that was presented.
So, keeping with the topic of the population, since government needs less and less of our tax money to keep itself going, is there going to come a day when they don't need us around very much anymore?
Yeah, once you take everything that everyone has, you become a liability. And I brought that point up about
population control
4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And the public is facing probably one of the highest potentials for mass genocide ever seen in the history of this planet.
Well,
very shortly, probably around the year 2012 or sooner.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, as they sit there being masterfully entertained, you know, all of a sudden everything, you're going to lose everything. Yeah, the reality checks are not in place for the public at this time. They're in a delusion. They watch their TV set. They run on the treadmill chasing the carrot. As long as they have food and shelter, oh, I guess everything's okay. Yeah, a lot of people are starting to worry about food and shelter right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, these guys that are running the show, you know, if all of a sudden the whole thing blew up, they just take everything they have and disappear someplace.
Well,
and leave the shambles behind. Yeah, and this is basic comprehension the public has to learn, and basic reality checks. A good little point is government had such a great great effort in taking over the marketplace, stocks, options, insurance company, banks. And two-thirds of the gross receipts now are non-tax revenue.
Yeah.
If the public actually got a clue and came in with a little hard love, they could administratively remodify every city, county, and school district in this country where you set up what I call a TRF fund, tax retirement fund. Just like a pension fund pays a salary and benefits at retirement, you can structure any city, county, or school district to operate on the exact same principle and phase out all taxation. Property tax, sales tax, income tax, the whole nine yards. And this has already been proven because if you look at the balance sheets from the government's own pension funds, they have an exemplary record for 65 years. You're just doing the exact same thing. In fact, you use the exact same managers to handle the funds with the same performance records. Guaranteed it would work, guaranteed to happen, but the only reason it's not going to happen is you have organized crime and full control now of government. Backed by the judges, the attorneys, they're all, you know, reaping the whirlwind of tens of thousands of bucks being thrown in their pockets for nothing. Okay, just justifying their own existence. And the law is lawless. And when the law is lawless, there is no law.
Yeah.
And right now, these guys operate as organized crime.
The syndicate, you call it.
The syndicate. I've called them the syndicate nonstop now for 15 years. You know, and I've had hits against myself many a times, and anybody who else came out mentioning the CAFR or the monies or the investments also had repercussions. And the silence is golden routine, you know, stays in play each and every day.
Mm-hmm.
I still have the ability to talk and you know, pass on the comprehension, and I am. And if I was not here, then the people wouldn't have got the wake-up call they just got.
I'm not going to hold my breath, but is there anything that can be done, even at a local level?
Well, you have a runaway freight train. When I first started National Disclosure in June of 98, yeah, the majority that heard for the first time, their reaction was the same as mine. This can't be. They kind of pulled this off right under my own nose. I would have seen it. You know, ego steps in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And after they look, and, you know, like I said, just go to Google, do a search, CAFR. You realize, what did you say, 7 million hits?
Yeah.
Now? Okay. You realize every city, every county, every school district has one. You never heard of it. They never mention it. Total blackout. Silence is golden. Two to three times more gross receipts than you ever heard about coming in on the budget reports. Okay? All of a sudden, this is true. It's right there in plain sight.
Wow.
Like I said, you're not looking for the needle in the haystack. You're looking for the haystack sitting on the needle. And when you look, you see the haystack. And then the repercussions that you saying, oh, my God, everything I was taught in grade school about this country and what was happening with the Democratic and Republican Party and our good wishes was a whole pile of crap. They've corrupted the entire operation. They've taken over everything. And you start getting scared. The fear will hit you. And people then called me, that looked for the first time about a year later, Walter, it's too late. It's too big. We can't stop this. And I would say, stop your whining. I said, it took 65 years to build it up, which is a snap of the finger time-wise. I said, in 10 years, with applied effort and corrective action, it can be checked. Now, New Zealand had the exact same situation growing up in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they were more rural, and the people were a little more unified. And there wasn't this greed aspect going on as it does in the United States, where one chases after the carrot blindly with blinders on. Yeah, people in New Zealand were a little bit sharper and smarter and more community oriented as a group. And they got together and they downsized their government by 75%. And that was about 25 years ago.
Uh-huh.
They've been happy ever since. You got to clip it. The overexpansion.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you a little secret I picked up a few years ago. I was reading about how they always say 666 mark of the devil.
Yeah.
Hey, I wonder what that was. I was kind of looking, and I'm pretty good at spotting things. And I noticed in the very original translation. It said the upside down 666 or the inverted 666. Okay? And I thought about that, and I'm pretty good with numbers, and I thought about it, and I said, well, what about when they wrote this? What would be an upside down 666? Well, back then, they always put the decimal point at the end of the number. They used whole numbers and fractions.
Uh-huh.
And so, if someone saw points, 999, they would think it's upside down, flip it over, and it would be now 666 points. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, what is .999 on in almost everyone's house in every country all around the world?
I don't know. I'm intrigued.
Every bullion bar, every coin, precious metal coin.
Oh, yeah.
9995.
That's right,
point,
yeah.
999.
Yeah.
The epitome of greed. The epitome of greed. So the mark of the beast is greed. Nothing more, nothing less.
Interesting.
And the 666, like I said, go back to the original translations, the very first writings, and it says the inverted or upside down 666.
Interesting, yeah.
And if you went back to the time when the vision was being seen, as I mentioned, decimal point always went at the end of the number, not at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And then they used fractions on all of the numbers. So if someone saw .999, they would think it's upside down just naturally, and 666.
So we're nothing more than little productivity units.
Yeah, and we're also conditioned and trained to chase after our dollars. We're trained to the flashy car, the big house, and saturated with celebrities and lifestyles of the rich and famous. Every single day, get us chasing after those dollars. I mean, it was brilliant on the part of the Federal Reserve and government to use the fiat dollar.
Yeah.
What they did there was, there was not enough gold or silver, period, to even handle 0.1% of the value in the United States. So they created the fiat dollar, which they could just print up currency, and it was the Federal Reserve's job to maintain the value of the dollar. The federal government, Federal Reserve is totally private, which I'm sure most people know already, and there's federal appointees to the Federal Reserve, but they're appointees. But the feds in 1963 pledged all of the gold that the federal government owned to the ounce to the Federal Reserve at a statutory price of $43 an ounce. So, you know, the gold in Fort Knox, you know, even if there is gold still sitting there, it's not ours. That was pledged to the Federal Reserve by gold certificates.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this gave the ability for the government to print up as much money as they wanted. And the Federal Reserve's job was to maintain the value through manipulation of the marketplace. And, you know, to manipulate the marketplace, now government came in buying up everything. The stocks, the banks, the insurance companies, by investment. Okay? This maintained, they can maintain their book value. Right now, if the entire population of the United States said, oh my God, the stock market's going to collapse, it's going to be 1929 all over, and every private individual sold every share of stock that they owned. Okay, you know, you see a lot of stocks collapse, the smaller ones. Fortune 500 companies, you may see a dip. Government would come in buying up all the slack, right? Then you see it start going higher again. And government would exclusively own 100%, and anyone who wanted to come back in and be a player would have to pay a premium. So, you know, as government took over the marketplace, they can now maintain their own book values. When you hear about the government bailing out, like Bear Stearns or anything else, they're protecting their own investment funds.
Wow.
Using the taxpayer funds. And the taxpayer keeps scratching their head saying, there's something wrong, I can't figure it out. It's organized crime. Nothing more, nothing less. When you look at it, you start seeing the upper echelon movement, and now they're killing a few million people. I mean, they killed over a million people in Iraq, took over their oil, took over Afghanistan. They have their crosshairs on Iran. And if they hit Iran, I tell you, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to say enough's enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because these guys do whatever the hell they want to do with no repercussions or consequence, and they're constantly using their talking heads in the media to keep the public at bay as if they're watching some soap opera. And you have to look at the character of the American people. If they allow this theft to take place, these murders to take place, they are responsible for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Not ultimately, they are responsible for it. In Germany, 1941, 42, 39.
Yeah.
When, you know, they rounded up the Jews to send them off to wherever, including concentration camps, all the German people said, oh, they're moving them to be with them with other Jews so they'll be happier. To relocation camps and relocation cities. 99.9% of the German population thought that.
Because
that's what they were being told. You know, we have a slight bit of spirit left in this country. Even though they're trying to brain dead the kids in our schools now, but there's most of the people that call and catch us are usually 65 plus. They're smart and intelligent enough, and they're focused enough to realize the ramifications of what's been taking place.
Yeah.
They catch it. I get very few calls from people that are 20 years old. They're too busy planning their next beer kegger.
Yep.
Couldn't care less. Hey, we're going down the beach. You know. But the people in their 60s, this was not the way it was supposed to be. And, in fact, everything I was taught as a kid in school about the United States and how Russia was bad because they owned everything and controlled the public, I found out was is now upside down, and government now owns and controls everything. And it's turning into a fascist state. You've heard of the Second Amendment, right, I'm sure?
Yeah.
Right, to keep
yeah.
and bear arms?
Uh-huh.
Well, they always, if you've watched debates on CNN or in the Senate and Congress, they always kind of skate around the main issue. I mean, it was clear as day in the main issue when they had the right to keep and bear arms. The only issue was that if a government became corrupt, the public had the ability to stop them. Period.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the number. It wasn't to go hunting. It wasn't to form militias and fight the Chinese if they tried to invade us. You know, that's there. The number one reason, period, was that if the government became a fascist totalitarian government, taking over everything and destroying the people could fight back. That was the number one reason.
Yeah.
And, of course, you don't hear that thrown into the debates or mentioned.
Not hardly.
On CNN or in the political, Bottom line is, they're slowly trying to deprive the public of any ability to protect themselves. You know, it's very easy to orchestrate non-disclosure, keep the public up in the la-la land as they take over everything, which they have. They did that over 65 years, and the majority of the public stayed in la-la land as they did it. And these guys were laughing all the way down to the bank each and every day. You know, the senators, congressmen, the judges, the city attorneys, the county board of supervisors that were in the inside track looking to build their little empires. You know, with the thousands of different investment funds that have created, self-insurance funds, advanced forward liability accounts, bond repayment accounts, self-funding debt accounts, pension funds. You know, if the two of us were, say, a county board of supervisor and a judge, and we got together and we said, well, our city has a self-insurance fund with $180 million in it, and we're good buddies with the manager. Maybe he'll lend us $45 million to build a condo project in Australia. So we approach him, and he goes, well, you're going to have to write a prospectus, cover every point A to Z. You're going to have to offer us the correct rate of return, which we're accepting now, which is 4.5%. In fact, here's three prospectuses that we approved last year along the same lines of what you're doing. So he gives us the blueprint. We draft our prospectus. We incorporate a company called New Zealand Coastal Properties, Inc. Okay, and we list our two accountants as the CEO and treasurer. We keep our names out of the corporation. We have a private agreement with the accountants. We get our $45 million loan, build a 1,200-unit condominium complex on the beach in Sydney, Australia, which is owned by New Zealand Coastal Properties, Inc., which now pays back the self-insurance fund, say, $5 million a year, and our project generates us $11 million a year. Well, we've now become extremely wealthy for the rest of our lives. Deals like that are cut 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. If you have a corporation that's starting off, you can funnel the investments into it to guarantee yourself success. If you like on the pharmacy companies, okay, let's pass some kind of health care program which funnels, $500 billion of taxpayer funds into the corporations which we own. Instant wealth creation. That's the name of the game. And the public sits there in la-la land being masterfully entertained. And when it all blows up in their face and they're all saying, what happened? What happened was they sat there in la-la land being treated as idiots, and they ended up like idiots, losing everything they owned and everything, their kids being killed and, their lives destroyed because they didn't have the gumption to step forward, get to the bottom of this, and look at it and say, you've already done this. You've done this under our noses. No way in hell will we have allowed it. We're going to shut you down.
Yeah.
Okay? Anyone who owns stock in a corporation, say, for example, our family had been buying up one corporation for the last 25 years, and we're 65% stockholders, okay? And the CEO, president, and treasurer of the company, though, all of a sudden decides to go, we're going to steal all the money from the company. We're going to funnel as much money out of the company as possible and steal all the value. And we find out about it. By proxy, we come in and we effectively shut down the company for reorganization and restructure.
Mm-hmm.
So we come in and suspend the charter of the corporation, go in, audit everything, find out what was done, find out what's left over, and then put together a blueprint for restructure and reorganization and then reinstatement of the corporation. Well, in reality, any city, county, state, the public could shut them down.
Wow.
Okay? They would be hearing the mass screaming from the talking heads. And they may even have the FBI coming down and arresting the people that are trying to do it. Because you're now, hitting the syndicate to say, we're going to crimp back your ability to rape us blind and to play these games. You know, we're going to shut you down and restructure and reinstate. under, as I mentioned, the TRF fund plan. Make them self-sufficient. Marine state with no taxation. And about one-third their size. Good thing. Very good thing. To do it, you're going to be going up against a syndicate.
Yeah.
In Al Capone's day, he charged businesses 25% to do business. If they didn't pay him his 25%, it shut him down. If they balked about it, it'd say, okay, fine, you're paying 35% now. If you don't pay the 35% within 30 days, I'm going to firebomb out your business. And he did. Okay? What do they do now? They'll come in, you didn't pay your 25%, they throw you into court, and they, oh, you know, it's 45% with fines and fees and interest. And if you don't pay it, they come in and take everything you own. And if you resist, they'll kill you.
Yeah.
They'll kill you. That's organized crime.
Yeah.
And people sit there and not, I mean, you have to look at the pure ignorance that has been, you know, shafted on us by the talking heads in the media, the mass conditioning of the boys as they laughed all the way to the bank to make sure the public's in la-la land.
Well, this started, as you said, in 1946, and, well, I don't think it's a coincidence that's right around the time that we got television.
Well, it's technology. The bottom line is opportunity presents itself.
Yeah.
And these guys, you know, it's not the Joe Sixpack grabbing, you know, $5 on Dallas. These are the sharpest crackers on the face of the planet that are ruthless. And they came in with every possible avenue of control and manipulation that they could possibly utilize effectively. They have the best psychologists, marketing strategists, databases of, you know, historical data to know if they do X, you know, Y will happen with the public. And they can manipulate so many people. They constantly follow the percentages. Well, how many people do we have believing us this time? 93%. We did an excellent job. You know. And the bottom line is, the bottom line, I mean, when they do an excellent job manipulating the entire population, you know, they're not getting an extra $1,000 for the month. They've just accomplished a few trillion you know, their own private island anywhere around the world. And, you know, the whole thing was in government, you know, well, we're supposed to be providing services and da-da-da-da. We have to keep the public pacified there and strung along. And, you know, the welfare program, the whole nine yard was all designed to make the public dependent. You know, if 100 years ago, all right, all of a sudden all the currency disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
No one had any currency. Well, most people bartered, and they knew their neighbors, they knew their friends, and people would network between each other, and probably 95% of the public would survive.
Yeah.
You know, networking and being self-sufficient, you know, within their own rights and networking with their friends and neighbors and so forth.
Yeah, yeah.
Today, if all of a sudden the currency disappeared, I don't think 95% of the people would survive.
Yeah.
I mean, look at that dependency factor.
Yeah.
And the control factor.
Yeah.
We fell right into it. Lock, stock, and barrel. Walked right into it. And anyone who is independent, they're taking out. Keep in mind, if you look at all the countries that are getting hit, all the independents that are not on the corporate, you know, New World Order,
yeah,
you know, use the entire population as a productivity unit game. And take off 85% of the energy produced, the independents are getting all eliminated one by one to consolidate the plan, the structure. And, you know, the thing that makes me sad is that when people look at this, they become helpless because they, you know, number one, they didn't see it in the first place. I mean, it was so masterfully orchestrated to make sure that they didn't see it. But it's so obvious. Like I said, you're not looking for the needle in the haystack. It's a haystack sitting on the needle. And when they finally do open their eyes and they look and they see it, they become very depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Too big, too many people involved. When I first started National Disclosure on the CAFR, people would call me up saying, well, where's the accountant? Who's taking the money? I said, number one, there's not one account. There's tens of thousands of accounts. It's the principle of operation across the board. And it's not so much who's taking the money directly. It's where that money is invested, who's getting what project backed, who's getting wealthy, and their corporations thriving based on playing the game and being in line with, in cooperation with what the objectives are. You know, so you have so many people with their hands in the pocket in that respect. One way, shape, or another, it just keeps on continuing.
Well,
what I mentioned regarding the TRF funds and, shutting down your local government for, reorganization and reinstatement, those are two valid points. The aspect of the law being lawless, you have so many judges, county attorneys, state employees breaking the law. I mean, acting in a criminal fashion, but no one prosecutes them. They always dangle out an example of prosecution, which is meaningless. I learned the game when I was 16 years old. My father was the director of personnel for the Department of Treasury in New Jersey. That was over all state employees in the state, both budgetary and autonomous. And he got me a summer job when I was 16, working at the Capitol building. Downstairs, they had their copier shop. So I ran the copiers, and back during that time, a Treasury secretary by the name of Byrne got indicted. Front page, all the papers. Byrne indicted! Took $50,000 bribe! You know, oh, terrible, terrible, you know. But at least they're cleaning up government, you know. It's front page news, radio, TV, you know, Byrne indicted. Well, the AG brought me the file on Byrne and this investigation. Big 3 foot tall stack of papers. He wanted 4 copies. So I'm 16 years old making copies. Of course, I'm sitting there reading through everything as I'm making the copies. They had their investigative lead list, you know, for suspicious looking transactions. I looked through it, and here, the Attorney General himself, the governor, congressmen, senators, judges, I mean, $3.4 million, $2.8 million, 9 million, yeah. Guess what the smallest figure on the entire list was?
That guy.
$50,000 in Byrne, correct.
Wow.
And here's front page and all the press, you know, Byrne indicted. He took a $50,000 bribe to get a shopping mall permit approved.
He was the scapegoat.
Yeah, I mean, but it's organized crime. And, you know, these guys do what they want to do, and they'll continue to do what they're doing until they're stopped.
Walter,
in fact,
is this the biggest scandal in history?
Yeah, and the biggest game in town and the principle of operation. And it's, like I said, the syndicated media was sent copies of all the comprehensive annual financial reports, education. Your school district puts out their own comprehensive annual financial report.
Uh-huh.
State universities, county colleges. And got to go back to Google, put in CAFR, and put your city, county, or state in, you know, quotes, City of Los Angeles, in quotes, and CAFR pops right up. San Diego pops right up. New Hampshire, or whatever. My website, I put most of the state CAFRs up for downloading. I've secured them to make sure that they're available in one directory. You'll see a big Staples button, you know, which you click on. Go to your, you know, it'll go into a directory and go into your state. Now, I'm from Arizona, so I put up, a lot of cities and counties and so forth from Arizona, school districts and pension funds and enterprise operations. Yeah, but the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, when it was drafted, I read the initial statutes, was drafted to be read by an 8th grade reading level.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, they knew senators and congressmen were going to be reading it.
Yeah.
And by the way, the people that are listening to this for the first time, and they go, oh, my God, I'm going to have to talk to my congressman, my senator. Keep in mind, they've been getting them for 20, 25 years.
Wow.
When I first started National Disclosure in 98, well, in 99, I had a call from a woman in Pennsylvania. Her good buddy, the congressman who she gave $260,000 to get him elected, she was a cattle rancher. She calls me up and she goes, I just spoke to my good friend, the congressman, and he is absolutely furious about this, and he said he's going to get to the bottom of it. And I said, oh, really? And I said, I'm going to put you on hold. I'm going to call the mailroom for the Department of Treasury in Pennsylvania, and I just want you to listen, don't say a word. So I did a conference call and got the mailroom. It says, Congressman so-and-so, I've been getting the comprehensive annual finance report. And she goes, yes. And I said, for how long? Oh, about 11 years. I said, where'd you send it to? His office? And she goes, yeah. And then I loved her for volunteering this information. She goes, oh, except for 3 years ago, he was vacationing with his aide down in the Bahamas, and his aide called us up and had to send it to him down there so he wouldn't miss it. I would have loved to have taped the next call this woman had with her good friend, the congressman, who she gave $260,000 to get him elected. You know, The bottom line is if they breach the silence's golden rule, they're targeted. You know, I was talking to a reporter one time. He interviewed myself and a friend, Dave Diodabo, in Prescott, Arizona. And they did this big feature story. It was on militias and so forth, but I spent 85% of my time talking about the Comprehensive Annual Finance Report. Dave, I brought in Arizona's 1994, and I said, if they take a picture, make sure you hold it up to your chest in every single picture. If they tell you to put it down, don't put it down. So here comes Sunday's edition, the Arizona Republic. Front page picture of Dave holding the Comprehensive Annual Finance Report up to his chest.
Really?
And 2.5 pages of ad copy, which is a lot, you know, for a newspaper, two full double pages. And the, not one word of the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. And here, keep in mind, he's holding it up to his chest, nice color picture on the front page.
Wow.
And I spent 85% of my time talking about it. So, a friend of mine, Brian Quigg, by the way, got run down by a car a couple of years ago, who was an investigative reporter. He called this reporter because he knew him. He goes, he's a good guy. I can't see him intentionally blanking something out. And after the niceties, Brian goes, you know, Walter talked about the Comprehensive Annual Finance Report 85% of his time. Here's his friend holding it up to his chest on your front page cover color shot and not a mention. Why? He goes, well, actually, I mentioned it about 5 or 6 times, but my editor didn't think it was newsworthy, and he cut it out.
There you go.
And then I cut in, and I said, listen, there's 100% blackout on the mentioning of the Comprehensive Annual Finance Report. And I said, hey, call around the newsroom, see if anyone's heard of it. He goes, calls around the newsroom, and he goes, nope, no one's heard of it. I said, ask your editor. He goes, I did. He was standing right next to me. He said he never heard of it. I said, good. Call the mailroom like I did. Find out he's gotten it for the last 10 years. And once you verify that he's received it for 10 years, which I already had, and ask him again if he's heard of it. When he says no this time, you'll know he's lying straight to your face.
Wow.
He goes, why would my editor lie to me? I said, because to pull off the biggest game in town, you needed the full cooperation of syndicated media, controlled education, both political parties. They were all included in on the game and sent copies for the last 35, 40 years. And they all know what's behind it. And they know not to mention a word, not a peep, not a mention. Your editor has been briefed to make sure that a cub reporter such as yourself, if he heard about the cash gross receipts or the Comprehensive Annual Finance Report, and you said, oh, I'm going to write a major feature story on this and break this out in the open, he'll say, no, you're not. You're going to be doing a story on butterflies in Argentina. Here's your ticket.
This reminds me of that movie, They Live. This is that bad.
Yeah, but keep in mind what I'm saying here. I mean, it's not speculation. I'm not talking fiction.
No.
I'm trying to be as clear-cut and straight to the point as I possibly can. And the essential thing is to breach this silence is golden rule. As I mentioned, click on the very first link on my site. Says e-news. Start here. And that's to mandate that your local city puts together all the local links for your local government coffers and sends it out to every registered voter and taxpayer saying, we strongly suggest that you carefully review your Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports for your local governments.
Walter, if
there's no reason not to do that. None.
If your local rep won't give you one, do you grab him by the scruff of the neck? What do you do? Is it...
Well, like I said, you know, you get together with a few people and mandate they send out one letter specifically on that issue, not including 10 other issues to try to diffuse comprehension, saying that the public carefully review their annual finance reports. Well, there's a lot of sharp cookies out there. And even if 70% of the people that get it say, well, what's this? Is this a new TV guide or what? You know, well, I don't care about that. Okay, forget them. It's that 30% factor that says, I never knew this existed. I better start looking into it. And out of that 30% factor, there's a 10% factor that are pretty sharp cookies that start looking and say, what? They're doing what? Look at this. Hey, Sally, come over here. Do you know they stashed away $350 million into our trash recycling plant or whatever? And look at our water district. They have another, $200 million stashed away. And look at our recycling plant. They've stashed away $460 million. Look at our pension funds. They did the actuarial projections they're using. They're 3 times overfunded. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That 10% factor all of a sudden makes all the difference in the world.
Okay.
And the silence as golden rule is now breached. That's essential, number one. Number two, you'll see TRF, written on my site a few times. Click on that TRF. That's Tax Retirement Fund. government's already proven through their own exemplary management of their own pension funds that you could establish TRF funds to pay the budgetary obligations for any city, county, state, or school district for all time to come. And, you know, when you draft a prospectus, you put in there a, when you phase out property tax, income tax, sales tax, everything else, all tax, you put in there just in case rates of return got so low where, you know, they're not paying the budgetary obligations, you have a variable rate sales tax, which you can implement to meet any shortfalls, and you have specific liability if they use the variable rate sales tax, forget shutting down the schools or laying off the police or anything else, you hit administration where it hurts. They get a cut in pay. They don't get any bonuses. They get a reduction in the staff until they bring the sales tax back down to zero. Gives them a good motive not to use it. But the bottom line is they already have a 65-year exemplary record of performance from the management of their own funds, so it's not an issue. They will continue to have as good a performance, and thus the TRF funds will be prospering. You have 60% of the money is invested in the local venues, zero unemployment rate. Public has more money to spend, higher rates of return on the investments, thus more money coming in for government from the TRF funds. Win-win situation for all involved. Financial cartels prosper. You'd have the TRF funds growing 2 to 3 times the size of the government pension funds in 10 years. You'd have the public now, no taxation. They become owners. Right now, anyone who listens who has property tax, they're strictly renters. If you had a $5 million home and all of a sudden something happened, you lost all of your cash flow and you couldn't pay your $30,000 tax bill, they're going to come in, kick you out, and take your $5 million property and walk with it. And give you a restraining order not to come around anymore.
Yep.
Uh-huh. See you later. Bye.
Yeah.
It's organized crime. That's theft. You know, 100 years ago, someone tried to steal your property, steal your kids, you pulled out your 30-odd six, put a round through the brain, and fed the brains to your dog. Okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what would have happened 100 years ago. Today, you're there, oh, I'm going to get an attorney, I'm going to fight you in court. Attorney goes, well, okay, well, this is a hard case. We're going to need at least $35,000 up front to handle this one. Then the attorney there cooperates with the judge to make sure you're screwed. And then they walk with your $35,000, walk with your property, walk with your kids, do whatever the hell they want to do. It's a racket.
Wow. Well, Walter.
And, the entertainment factor, the syndicated media, it's their responsibility to make sure the public is masterfully entertained and doesn't have one iota of comprehension.
We're sure of that.
Of what's transpiring.
Walter, we went way over an hour. I'm generous with your time. I couldn't resist. This is big. I guess we should wrap it up, but I'll let you wrap it up. What would you like to tell people in summary about this?
Well, if, the bottom line is, in history, if you went back thousands of years in all civilizations, people find themselves in the pits, and they work very hard, very focused to get themselves up to a standard of living and a good environment for themselves, their family, their children, their friends. They work, several generations pass as they're working, they build up, and they hit an epitome of, a good standard of living. But what happens is, the cycle repeats itself, and it has done it hundreds of times throughout different civilizations. They hit that plateau, and all of a sudden a couple generations pass, and they forget why they fought their other way up there in the first place. In fact, they work their way right down to the pits again.
Yeah.
Keep in mind the importance of the gifts we're all given. This is paradise. If I was the creator, in a timeless state looking out over the universe, and I said, I want to build a place for my children, I'm going to give it water, air, skies, flowering plants, I'm going to give my children the ability for emotions, love, charity, protection, compassion, and everything I could possibly think of. I don't think there's one thing the Creator left out. Everything we could possibly have is at our disposal. And for us to allow this to happen, it's shameful.
It's our own darn fault.
And, unless we get some gumption, this is, we are at war. We're not at war with Iraq. We're not at war with Afghanistan. We're at war with our own selfish greed. And in fact, most of the people, and when I first came up with this in New Jersey and briefed everybody, 60% of the people said, I wonder how I can get a piece of that. 25% were generally mad. Okay, so the exact same mentality that allowed all of the politicians to do exactly what they're doing right now,
yeah,
and the cutting the deals, we're all guilty of. And if we do not change that, we're facing an Armageddon that will be the destruction of our own lives. And we'll all be sitting there saying, what happened? And the only thing that happened was we allowed our own greed, our own selfishness, our own lack of appreciation, and foresight and, due diligence to destroy ourselves. So this is really serious business, very serious business, and everyone needs to, focus in and, put the brakes on. Start on one city level, county level, school district, put the brakes on, and if they're, look at the standards from 50 years ago when things, there was a lot more ethics and a lot more productivity from our government employees. They actually did a very good job in a very simple manner. That's the way it should be now. If you downsize government back to the same level it was in 1960, okay, after adjusting for population increase and inflation, they'd be collecting less than, half the money they're collecting today. And, you can effectively, through the TRF, phase out all taxation across the board and put the motive back into motion for government to be small, proficient, and efficient, but only if we do it. I go back to that 12-year-old boy I mentioned in the beginning of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Who you gave carte blanche to cut his own allowance check, and he made $1,200 a week, and he got a check for $1,000 a week. You told him you're going to cut him back. He's going to scream, he's going to holler, he's going to kick, and he's going to use any logic available to him to justify how a 12-year-old cannot survive on $800 a week.
Yeah.
Well, keep in mind, government now has grown into the biggest totalitarian fascist regime that the planet's ever seen, and the U.S. government has taken, with composite local and federal government, has taken over the marketplace, the insurance industry, the banking industry. They're the number one profiteers by ownership, investment ownership, from the banks, the insurance companies, the stock market, the whole nine yards. The public is being bled in every possible direction. People used to think it was just taxation. Wrong. When you look at the whole picture, taxation is only one-third of the bleed right now. And, we have to take responsibility. This is supposed to be our country. And it's, I'm pretty furious on what's been going on. And by the way, if they attack Iran, if 100,000, if 99.9% of the population said, we do not want you to attack Iran, under no circumstances I attack Iran, they're going to do it anyway because they want to. They feel like it.
Yeah.
They've gotten away with anything else, including blowing people's heads off, like Sandy Weaver's wife, or burning 100 people on TV, like in Waco and the World Trade Center.
Yep.
They've gotten away with it, no problem, no repercussions. In fact, they gave themselves raises and extra vacation time. Okay? Why should they not attack Iran, even if 99% of the public said no? Now, 500,000 of the public came out saying, we do not want you to attack Iran under no circumstances. If you do, we're going to drag you the hell out of your offices and execute you on the street. Now they have something to worry about, but that's what Homeland Security is for.
Yeah.
To watch those 500,000 people and take them out if they object. Period.
Boy.
That's the reality we're facing right now, today, in this country. And keep in mind, people are going to turn on their TV set and see, Ram Charger, get your special today, and vacation down in the Bahamas on American Airlines. You'll love it. We're getting all of these sound bites of, everything's normal, everything's, the entertainment. And it's conditioning everybody, so the reality of the seriousness of what's going on does not register in their brains. They're just being soundbited along to make so they're in a delusional state of everything's normal, everything's fine, another day as usual. As these boys do what they're doing, including taking over other countries, killing millions of people, stealing everybody blind, right in front of their faces. Start adding up the totals of the investment funds. I've been doing that for 10 years now. Government took it all over. That's why I say right on the beginning of my website, government owns it all by investment. Wow. I mean, Houston School District one time, Disney made an objectionable fund, and it was Austin School District. We're going to sell our $32 million in Disney. Everybody's saying, what's the school district doing with 32 million shares of Disney?
Yeah.
Or the New York State Retirement Fund CAFR, when they were planning on divesting Microsoft and the feds were going after Microsoft to divest. Oh, no, we're going to keep our 44 million shares of Microsoft. And everybody goes, 44 million shares of Microsoft? Alan Greenspan, 2000. I'm a little bit concerned about the $80 trillion a year derivative market. Well, that derivative market now is up to about $500 trillion. And guess who the number one player is? U.S. Composite Government. We just got shut down in China and India last year. China said no more U.S. government investment funds in China, where we're taking over the Chinese economy. Everybody hears about the $1.5 trillion in cash the Chinese are holding in U.S. dollars. They don't hear about the $7 trillion in market value that the U.S. owns in China.
So they saw it happening.
Yeah, so. And the beat goes on, and we are entertained each and every night to make sure that we don't interfere with the boys' operations.
Can I ask you, this is Cold Walter, I didn't prep you about this, and you don't have to answer if you want, but just out of curiosity, what's your spiritual beliefs?
I was born a Catholic. I was an altar boy back when I was younger. Went to St. Bartholomew's Church in East Brunswick. Kind of backed off a little bit from the church just on the experiences I had back in East Brunswick. I remember one, the big event was Midnight Mass for Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And I just got a brand new video camera, and this is back when video cameras, were just coming out and not too many people had them, and I went in and taped Midnight Mass, and I put in little character generations for the year and what was going on. Can't do a good job. And I made a copy, and it was all happy to bring it down. I wanted to bring it down to the Monsignor Kelly and give him a copy so he'd have a record of Midnight Mass, okay? So I went down, knocked on his door, and I said, here's a copy of Midnight Mass taped last night. It's real good. And I handed it out, and he wouldn't take it. And he goes, well, how much do you want for it? I said, that's a gift. He goes, no, you're going to charge me for this, aren't you? I said, no, it's a gift. Take it. He wouldn't take it. Uh-huh. Here, I'm giving away a gift, special gift.
Yeah.
He wouldn't take it. He thought I was going to charge him or send him a bill.
Yeah.
So I left him, and I walked over to the nunnery and knocked on the door, not answered. And I said, here's Midnight Mass, taped last night. Have a copy. And she goes, oh, thank you. And I left. Then, a couple years later, I was actually working for Merrill Lynch at the time, Merrill Lynch in Morristown, when they started their first all-commodity house, Merrill Lynch Commodities, Inc. And one evening, there was some special going on over at the cathedral, which was an antique cathedral, like the old-style solid stone building. And I went over and knocked on the rectory to find out if the event was still going on, and the priest is hiding behind the door, opening up this little door, and he was afraid to step outside. I'm wearing a three-piece suit, too. And I just said, wrong attitude, and I just kind of backed off. If you have to, if you look at Jesus, and Jesus, very rarely was he in a traditional church.
Exactly, yeah.
he went all over the countryside preaching, talking, and so forth. And I love it when I hear somebody say, I tell people Jesus was Jewish. No, he wasn't. He was Christian.
Sheesh.
Wow. If you had some kind of scroungy looking guy who got hit by a car, he's lying on the street side, and church was getting out, 95% of people would drive, oh, that's terrible, look at that poor man. And two minutes later, oh, what are we having for lunch? How many would genuinely stop?
Yeah.
I'd be concerned. So the hypocrisy kept me clear of going weekly to church.
I understand.
But I try to live what I know.
Yeah, just the reason I ask is hearing all of this. I mean, things are so, bleak. That's really, for me, my beliefs in that area are the only thing that keep me going. I mean, wow.
Well, the cute thing government did was to control all the religions. And, they started the 501(c) C-Corps, whatever.
Yes.
And for the Catholic Church and all the other churches to maintain their tax exemption, they cannot preach, talk about, or discuss politics.
Yeah, they muzzle them, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, they Muslim. And the one group which I thought was kind of sharp in what they did, you've heard of the Mormons, right?
Yeah.
Well, here's what probably most people will not know, including most Mormons. Back, about 15 years ago, I pulled out the annual financial report for the Mormon Church. Okay. Uh-huh. They're a public corporation, and public. I mean, just like a regular AT&T, IBM, Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah.
Okay. They had over 30,000 different businesses. Their annual financial report at that time showed about $35 billion in net worth and assets.
Uh-huh.
It's probably well over $100 billion now. But what they had was, as a subsidiary corporation, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That was a 501c corp.
Yeah.
So the Mormon Church is a for-profit corporation.
Wow.
They can say whatever they want and do whatever they want. Okay? The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is a subsidiary of the parent corporation, that's what's listed as the 501c corp.
No wonder they're so loaded.
Yeah. And, you know, I kind of looked at the council of elders and so forth and the prophets, and I looked at how much they were getting paid and so forth. And, they were very reasonable, $85,000 a year. And I looked at where the money was being spent, and, you know, it was all going towards local communities, schools, hospitals. So, you know, they got to name one, mark as far as how the monies were being spent and, you know, not being greedy between the ones controlling it. But it was pretty sharp, though, that they are a for-profit corporation. So they're not restricted as the Catholic Church may be or anyone else regarding talking politics or whatever. They can do it without losing their, exemption as the Mormons.
And those guys
they can't do it as the Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, though.
And they're really strict about tithing to their church and paying what we know as the unjust income tax.
That kind of reminded me, I went to the Mormon Church a couple times, and I think the tithing aspect reminded me of Amway Corporation. That was kind of a turnoff. But even though I'm a very generous person, if I want to be. But they had a good family structure, very, very supportive to the family. So on a Christian basis, from the Creator looking at all religions, they would have probably gotten pretty high marks because they focused on community, family, and, structure.
Well, they take care of each other like nobody else.
Yeah, and that's, that would get high marks in the Creator's viewpoint.
Yeah.
The hypocrisy is taking place, though, from the, Christian religions, would probably get some pretty strong demerits from the Creator. The Jewish faith, I hear so many people always knocking down the Jews, Jews are responsible for everything. And, it's in the financial arenas. And, a lot of the CEOs of some of these large houses, they're all Jewish, but there's a reason for it. The Jewish religion, for hundreds of years, they teach business as a part of their religion.
Mm-hmm.
They've always done that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're teaching business, what would you expect? They're going to be good at business.
Yeah.
If the Catholic Church taught business to all of their members from scratch one, it would be all the Jewish people would be in competition with the Catholic people in the same financial arenas. Yeah. Well, the bottom line was they weren't. The Mormons do. The Mormons teach business.
So one caveat about the Mormons, while they take care of each other, they have no peers in that. But when it comes to taking care of anybody else, it's been my experience, they treat others outsiders like dirt.
Yeah, I've noticed that on a few occasions. I wouldn't say like dirt, but they've stuck their nose up to others. They're not as good as us if you don't believe them. Know what we know.
Yeah.
But that's their biggest demerit that I've seen.
Okay.
Yeah, that's their biggest demerit. But the positives that I've seen though overweigh the demerit side. You're seeing the government now focusing on targeting the Mormons. I don't know if you've noticed that recently. When they pick out little fringe groups and try to make it believe it's all the rest.
Yeah.
The Mormons also, which most people don't know, is that all of the men are trained to be as a militia. And they're trained to you know, keep supplies, be ready to fight at any time.
Oh, yes.
If the Mormon Church called up an army of their followers, right now they would have a standing army of about 6.5-7 million people ready to fight.
Yeah.
Okay. In Thailand, I went over in Thailand for about a month and a half, and I sat down, you know, with the Buddhas on numerous occasions. You know, I had lunch with them, and, you know, we chatted into the wee hours. But in Thailand, the Buddhas own all the gold. The government does not. The only one the people would entrust with the wealth of the country were the Buddhas. And the Buddhas have the wealth of the country in the event that the country is invaded. They can release the gold. Natural disaster, they can release the gold. Or if the ruling government becomes corrupt, they can release the gold to take out the ruling government.
He who owns the gold makes the rules.
Yeah, and the only one that was entrusted, you know, with all of the gold were the Buddhas. You know, the guys walk around all day long and collect food from people's backyards and, you know, sit in the temples and live a life of poverty. Yeah, when you start building this wealth up, you know, keep in mind that half of our politicians now, especially the younger ones, are spoiled little yuppies. You know, thinking about what deal they're going to cut and how much they're going to get on their pension funds. And if they quit this job, can they get a second pension fund, then a third and a fourth to build up their wealth? And who are managing these different investment funds? Do you think we can cut a deal to get them to back our project or our corporation? That's the whole game. As they perpetuate, well, what can we do for the public today to make them think that we're working for them?
Wow.
Well, look at the school districts. I mean, same thing. It's all money, money, money. They're bleeding the public dry. No performance. The results are down.
I tell you that.
Because of the greed. I go, just word greed, 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 greed. Root of all evil, greed.
Yes.
The mark of the beast, greed. 999. It's in every house. Keep in mind what I told you before, that 999.999.
Yeah.
It's in every house, every country, all around the world. It's the most prevalent common denominator number that you'll find all around the world. And people hoard it, and they'll turn their families, friends, and, you know, their back on their ethics to get it.
Well, the regular people aren't even allowed to own it when the oligarchs decide they're not allowed to.
If they do. And that's the other thing on the fiat dollar. Now when they build up all of the wealth throughout the country, you know, by the dollar, you know, the cabal, Federal Reserve and the big boys, were hoarding all of the gold since 63.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking, they're picking up 100, 200, 300 tons a month worldwide. Now, hopefully the people will catch this one point. If they try to force the gold and the silver standard back on the U.S. dollar, that's putting the gun in your mouth and pulling the trigger. Keep in mind, I was a commodity trading advisor for 14 years, especially with silver and gold. But we don't own any gold. A country like India has 10 times more gold than the United States people do, Thailand and so forth. If they went back on the gold and silver standard, that means we'd have to buy the gold and the silver.
From the oligarchs?
And through conversion, they've been hoarding all the gold. The entire population of the United States would lose 85% of their value in one smooth move through that conversion. And the cabal would own it all at that point in time.
Oh, wow.
And the dollar would go right down through the floor. Okay, gold would go right up to the $3,000 on the first leg and $6,000 on the second leg. Now, somebody who's greedy saying, well, I got gold, man, I'll be real wealthy if it goes to $6,000 an ounce. Yeah, as every one of your neighbors and friends and relatives who didn't just lost 85% of their entire net worth through the conversion.
Yeah.
And then the wealth would now be all transferred into the hands of the cabal and the boys and pulling off all these routines from scratch one. So hopefully people see that. Now, Ron Paul, who I support, initially he was saying he wanted to go on the gold and silver standard, and I kind of wrote him a long letter and published it openly, saying you don't want to do that. But what you could do, which is not a problem, is you go on a commodity index value to back the dollar, which includes gold, silver, copper, grains, even throw in a land index. I mean, land, we have trillions of dollars of value in land.
Hmm.
Yeah. Create a commodity index to back the dollar. Now you have the dollar backed by a hard commodity, a grouping of, in an index, and the dollar would go up in value, and the gold boys would not make a killing, but they wouldn't get killed either because you'd have the gold turn into the index also.
Mm-hmm.
So I heard him about 3 weeks ago. He must have read the letter because someone said, and we heard you wanted to go back to the gold and silver standard, and he goes, well, a commodity index.
Wow. Huh.
You know, which is viable, and that's, you know, resolves the fiat currency problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Because our wealth is in our base commodities and in our land. And if you back the dollar based on a land index, precious metals index all combined into one, you know, that's the true value. But as far as we back it by gold and silver, we don't own gold and silver. And by conversion, we'd lose everything we had. Because the fiat currency, which if you actually printed up enough $100 bills to equal the intrinsic value of the property, companies, and everything else in the United States, that stack of $100 bills would be 300 yards wide going to the moon.
Wow.
Okay, you're talking, you'd have to print up approximately $350 trillion minimum. What's in circulation is a very small amount. Most values and is on you know, computers and digital zeros.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you all of a sudden said the dollar is going to be backed by gold and silver, just you put the gun in your mouth and pull the trigger. Commodity index, that's a different story because there we have, you know, yeah, especially if you throw in the land index, a couple hundred trillion dollars in value. So all of a sudden the dollar starts gaining in value. But keep in mind, the government investment funds, they've been divesting from the dollar for the last 25 years. And they have most of their investments now, a lot of them are in other currencies outside of the dollar, outside of the country. So they've been profiting from this downturn in the U.S. economy on their international investments. Our own government has. And all you have to do is look at their own books. Start with the New York State. And by the way, the New York State Retirement Fund, being nice, spotlighted it for the last year and a half. For the first time, they came forward and they said, we've been making a lot more money than we said we had, so we're going to refund our pensioners in the cities and the counties and the state agencies that participated, give them refunds on what they put in. Because people started looking. They saw they were just building up the balances, building up their empires, and they were strictly participatory for the employees. So, you know, people started learning the game. They looked. Same applies to most of the other government pension funds. In fact, when they say, well, shortfall, we're going to have to start increasing contributions to our pension funds, New Jersey, for example, what they do is they play a little actuarial game with their, you know, rates of return projections for the next 20 years. Say, for example, yourself, you needed $40,000 a year at retirement.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And you were getting a 10% rate of return. That means you put aside $400,000. Okay? Every year, 10% rate of return, generating $40,000. Okay? You with me?
Uh-huh.
Well, if you said to yourself, well, even though I'm getting 10%, it looks like rates of return are going to turn down, so I'm going to change my actuarial projection to 5%. Now you need $800,000 if you're using a 5% actuarial projection into the future. Even though you may be getting 10, 15% right now, if you're using an actuarial projection, you just inflated your requirements for what you need. You doubled it by going from 10 to 5. Government, back in 1990 to 2000, every government employee, if they asked what they were getting on their pension fund, we would be told 7, 8%. That was the actuarial projection being used. The real rate of return was 16 to 23% per year. Washington, Oregon, Arizona. Okay?
Uh-huh.
States shouldn't have been collecting contributions from the cities, counties, and employees. They should have been giving refunds.
Wow.
But then after 9/11, and keep in mind, well, the one good point, which is kind of beneficial, you know, interest rates, when they drop down to 1%, 0.5%, government was the primary investor. If government wasn't the primary investor, rates when they dropped down to those levels. Government forced them down to those levels because they were the primary investor. That benefited the entire population. Then they had the big bubble in the real estate market and a lot of scammers, writing worthless papers on the mortgages, which created a fiasco. Yeah, which they're doing damage control to right now to correct it. But business as usual continues and the beat goes on.
Well,
until the public starts looking at the composite totals, seeing the control ownership the government's amassed at this point in time, the beat will continue to go on unabated.
Wow. Okay, well, we've done 2 hours now, Walter, and yeah, the beat goes on. I'm hoping and praying then that maybe we'll wake up and maybe a few local areas will get changed. I don't know. But
let's do a little test for your listeners.
Uh-huh.
We'll do a little test for your listeners. Your listeners that have listened to the show caught the points, and if it had strong meaning to them,
yeah,
and they've learned what they should have learned 60, 50 years ago, now they know it from hearing it. I request they just bounce me an email saying they heard the show and thanks.
Okay.
And my email is right on the top of my webpage, camphor1.com.
CAFR1.com, and yeah, I'll put a link up. When I put the show up, I'll put a link to your site up.
Now, give me if you archive the show, also give me the link to the archive, and I'll put it up on my website.
I'll do so. I'll send you. I'll do that.
Oh, well, and right now, I currently get about 500 to 700 visitors a day, unique visitors to the website when I do feature articles or something's published. It jumps up to as high as 25,000 a day.
Wow.
And it works all out there. If you do, like I say, you do a search on CAFR on Google, you'll get anywhere from 5 to 7 million hits. My website, number one. But do this now. After you do that search, Google has little tabs that says images, news, groups. Do a new search on CAFR. You will not get one comprehensive editorial on the CAFR. Okay? Not one. You'll just have, City of Minneapolis, one Certificate of Excellence Award, Miami, Florida, whatever. No editorial comprehension of any consequence whatsoever. And to get 7 million hits, and to get about, 15, 16 on the news of the annual finance report, like the Bible, it's like putting in the Catholic Church, and Bible, and a Catholic Church, and you get 7 million hits, and you put in the Bible on, news, and you get, 10 hits.
Wow. Yeah.
No comprehension.
What a discrepancy.
It's not allowed. It's not accidental. It's intentionally orchestrated to make sure the public doesn't have a clue due to the money involved, period. I mean, you got so many people with their hands in the pockets, both political parties. And when I found out about this, I had a group called Hands Across New Jersey. I incorporated in New Jersey, and we had 63,000 volunteers. In 3 months, we organized all the counties. I found out about the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. The Republican Party spent $1.5 million to infiltrate Hands Across New Jersey and take it over from the inside. They did. Never to mention the CAFR again. Politicians that brought it up on their web pages were targeted and went into obscurity. This is serious business. It's lethal business, too. Like I said, these guys will kill you.
Boy, if this...
If they feel like it.
If this issue doesn't show the natural greed in people's hearts more than anything else I've ever confronted, because this is so vast and so many people have to be involved.
Yeah, it's a sad... Like I said, the sad thing is also when people find out about it for both first time, 60% react saying, how can I get a piece of that?
Yeah,
which
wow.
is the exact same reason as there in the first place.
Yep.
And we have to look at ourselves very clearly and deeply as a country and as a people. Just out of opportunity, we've reached this point.
The root of
but
all...
it's not a good point.
Yeah.
It's not a good point.
Well, Walter...
And anyone who is religious, ignorance is bliss. But once you know, God can forgive the ignorant, bliss children to a certain degree. But once you know, and if you participate and continue, then the wrath can start to incur.
Yeah. Walter, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
It was great being with you there, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to get a little information out to some people that need to know.
Okay. If I told you now, if I told you now, I would have. If I told you now, I would have.
we have children here. If I told you now, I'd be passing through.
This world is not my home. This world is not my home. This world is not my home. Passing through. This world is not my home. This world is not my home. This world is not my home. I'm just passing through. I can't live at home in this world anymore. I can't live at home in this world anymore. I can't live at home in this world anymore. I can't live at home in this world anymore.
This world where my children have gone before. This world where my children, this world where my children, this world where my children have gone before.
I can't live at home in this world anymore. I can't live at home in this world anymore.
That is the way things are.